The numbers told the story, they always do.
It's one of those idiots who believe in analytics.
This is a numbers game with Gil Alexander on VSiN.
It is Wednesday morning in downtown Las Vegas, which means you're halfway through me filling in for Gil this week on a numbers game. I am Jared Smith. Thank you. God, Kelly Bitlin chimes in. We were having a really fun conversation right before we came on. We are going to continue it at some point during the show. I'll tease it. We were basically saying, if you could choose any quarterback career path for your life to follow, what would best suit your mindset? And what I mean by that is, would you rather be the Tom Brady who's the underdog picked in the sixth round and, you know, scrappy backup? Or would you rather be the Joe Burrow, Mr. Cool Heisman Trophy winner coming in? For me, I'd rather be Brady, because I think if I was Burrow, I'd get really complacent. And by the time I won that Heisman, my brain would be elsewhere. So we'll have that conversation a little bit. Maybe we'll ask JVT or Frank Schwab, who's coming up later in the show, which quarterback brain he would rather have. Do you want to chime in quickly before we move on?
I think that you have a real great sense of yourself.
I do.
If you can answer Tom Brady, because I think it's probably the right answer for most people. Look, in this life, it's always great to have less expectations on you than more expectations. Surprise people. It's always one of the best things in life.
Under-promise, over-deliver.
Absolutely. There it is, Jared. That's my life motto right there. Under-promise, over-deliver. So I think in reality, most people should want that. But if I had the choice right now, give me Joe Burrow.
That's the
give
rub.
Me a Heisman Trophy, a championship.
Exactly.
Cocky cigar smoking in the locker room.
At age 21.
Exactly.
Instead of Brady, who comes in looking like, you know, the dude from math class with a scrawny pre-draft picture. And he doesn't even play his rookie year until Mo Lewis, I think that was the linebacker that knocked out Bledsoe in that game. I forget.
Poor Bledsoe.
He took it really hard in that Netflix documentary, too.
I hadn't heard from Bledsoe in years, and I thought he was one of the funniest surprises of that roast. Well, I thought he was great.
That's what wine does to your brain. It makes you – he is a big wino. We're gonna have some fun a little later in the show. I will explain why I think Tom Brady, if I had to choose. Now, this is a personal choice. If I had to choose one of the paths, I think knowing enough about myself and how I think and how I go about my business, I would choose the Brady path. I mean, there's other paths. You could take a Rodgers path where you had a really good college career and then maybe you just got, you know, slighted a little bit in the first round. You get through chip. It is interesting, and it's one of those philosophical.
Tough draft day. A lot of days spent in snow.
That I'll be honest. This is one of those things that I live alone. I have a dog, but I live alone. I have a lot of time on my hands sometimes to think late at night. So I think about these things. I was thinking about this on the ride in this morning. If I could, warg for Game of Thrones people, warg my brain into one of the other quarterbacks, who would I have the most success emulating the way that I think and the way that I think about myself? It's interesting stuff. But today's topic at hand is obviously right off the top, Major League Baseball. Yesterday was one of those weird days. I think on the scale of 1 to 10, yesterday was an 11 in terms of baseball weirdness. It just – you had guys – you had Paul DeJong who plays for the – yesterday he played for the White Sox until the trade deadline, literally moving dugouts, moving
it's
locker
my
rooms.
My favorite thing every year. When,
yeah, you got traded from the White Sox to the Royals. Usually we get one random one a year. And then you had obviously a lot of big names. Jack Flaherty, I think, was the biggest one, right at the buzzer, by the way. Right at the actual literal buzzer, we had one of the biggest trades of the entire deadline with Jack Flaherty going from the Tigers to the Dodgers. So Tarik Skubal stays. Garrett Crochet stays. The last one's a surprise. I think what happened with Crochet is people just got weirded out by the fact that he's a starter, but they might have to move him to the bullpen. You're moving him to a situation he hasn't pitched in all year. You know, there's a lot of change there, and you have to give up a lot to get him. Skubal, I think, was just probably too expensive because of the contract situation. I thought there was a chance he was going to get moved, but it looks like the Tigers kind of pivoted to Flaherty at the last moment there and was able to get him dealt. The Orioles made a couple of deals. The Trevor Rogers one was intriguing. I think everyone who acquired a player yesterday won, because usually the way these work, you're not giving up as much to, you know, you don't see the block, but that's why Crochet and Skubal didn't get moved, because of their contract situations, you would have to given up a lot to get those guys. And a lot of times, they're both very young, and they're both relatively cheap right now, considering the production you're getting. So these teams are a little bit more buy low, sell high at the deadline. They want to take a flyer on a guy who's had a rough year. Maybe he's a little bit down. Maybe he's a veteran who pitches for a bad team. And for the most part, it's a short-term, low-risk commitment. And you don't give up a lot to get him because it's tough. These prospects don't grow on trees. Yeah. I guess sometimes it seems like they do based on how many names they throw in.
Two homers yesterday for Jazz Chisholm, right?
Jazz Chisholm is, as a Yankees fan, what else can you ask for?
Okay, so as a Yankees fan, outside of that, though,
they gave up nothing for him.
What are you left feeling today? Are you feeling like this was a good trade deadline for the Yankees? Because I feel like they're the one team that's been pitching. Yeah, I feel
based
like they're the one team that's been getting killed a bit.
Based on what the Dodgers gave up, what the Dodgers gave up for Flaherty, the big gripes I saw from some of the Yankee elitists, I'll call them, prominent, baseball people that I think, can be a little critical sometimes of some of the bigger teams. The Yankees could have made a similar deal, probably. I guess they just didn't see the value in Flaherty. The problem for the Yankees, for me, I don't think their rotation's very good. I think even Gerrit Cole, who was pushed back yesterday because of fatigue. Gerrit Cole's made, what, 6 starts this year, and he's already fatigued?
Oh, that was a weird story. Yeah.
I mean, I'm...
There was different reports about him, having an illness, and then,
Yeah, he said he had a stomach virus, and if that's the case, then that's fine.
Yeah, yeah.
And we'll see how he looks in his next start. Did he have the stomach virus a few days ago when he gave up, 8 runs to the Mets? Or did he just develop that stomach virus over the last couple of days? I don't know the answer to that question. But the Yankees don't have an ace if he's not pitching at an ace level because Marcus Stroman and Luis Hill, who I love, is he's pitched, 120 innings this year, and he's never pitched that much. How much is he going to have left in the tank in October? I hope a lot.
Because he's been their best pitcher this year.
The Yankees' best pitcher this year is a guy that wasn't pitching in baseball a couple years ago. That's scary when you have Stroman and not Suarez, Cortez. I'm thinking of another lefty who I think is a little bit overvalued. And Gerrit Cole. I'm worried. I'm worried about the rotation. And the bullpen blew another save last night. They won the game in extra innings. Good for them. Those extra inning games with the ghost runner on second could be really fluky. I'm not drawing anything from any. I am not looking into any extra inning wins as positive or negative because when we get to the playoffs, when the games matter, that doesn't exist. So I think they're going to lose today, but I don't consider them to be better than the Orioles right now. I don't know why. Maybe it's just because I view Corbin Burns as better than any pitcher that the Yankees have. And that's just kind of where I'm at with Baltimore right now. But I have Baltimore, even though the odds say that the Yankees are a favorite right now to win the division, I have Baltimore in front of them.
Yeah, and maybe a more rounded out lineup, well-rounded lineup.
Well, with Chisholm, it makes it different. Yeah. I honestly think if he could do this for another 50 games, I'll change my tune a little bit. I'll change my tune a little bit. He has, and I've watched a lot of Yankee games I've been a Yankee fan since I was basically at birth. The backstory is my mom's dad, my grandfather, was involved with Gene Michael in a business sense. And so I was around the team a lot growing up. Actually, my grandfather's family, actually, when CBS sold the Yankees in 1978, I think, my grandfather's company put in a bid for it. They were outbid by Steinbrenner, but I was very close to the Yankees growing up. I've watched them literally since I can remember. When you watch Jazz Chisholm, he reminds me of someone who isn't afraid of the spotlight. And I think sometimes when the Yankees make a trade for a player, it's never the back of the baseball card that's a concern. Usually you're getting good stats. That's why the Yankees are making a trade. It's the heart. Does this guy have the heart to compete in New York?
Yep.
It's a different animal. It is a different animal when you're dealing with that every day. Guys like Aaron Judge can handle it. Guys like Sonny Gray couldn't handle it.
DJ LeMahieu, question mark?
Well, basically, here's what the Yankees did. They called Jazz Chisholm and they said, hey, Jazz, we're trading for you. Can you play third base? Because we've got a guy at third base right now who we need to get out of the lineup. And he can. But he's looked awesome at third base the last two nights.
But, LeMahieu's a good example, right? Like, I mean, wasn't when acquired, he had some monster numbers going, right?
Yeah, I think he just Father Time's undefeated. Yeah. The bat speed is too slow. He has one home run this year. He was almost a 400 hitter. Now, granted, he was in Colorado for a number of years, but that first year with the Yankees was very good. It's tough. Listen, baseball is tough. It's every day. It's a grind. But that's why days like this are great. Days like today is what every day in June and July should be. I tweeted this out right before the show. Baseball, sun up to sundown. 9 a.m. to 9 p.m. here in Pacific time. Obviously, Eastern time, it'll be noon to midnight. But that's what June and July is. Today's the last day of July. Next week, we're talking about preseason football. This week, there's a game. Tomorrow, right? 2 days? Friday?
No, Thursday night. Yeah, tomorrow night.
There's a football game tomorrow night. Played with real pads. They have helmets, cleats. They're going to paint the field and everything. It's a real game.
The Texans, a 1.5-point favorite. 31.5 is your total in that game. No bet for me. There will be no bets for me. The Bears announcing yesterday that none of their starters will be playing in the game. The Texans.
Tyson Bagent, though. Remember him.
That's right. Secret Bagent man will be in there.
Bagent man. Really excited about today's show. Kelly booked another good one. We've got Jonathan Bautobel coming up next. We'll talk a little Olympic hoops and college football. College football guide's out tomorrow. Very excited about that. I've got a couple of write-ups. JVT's got some, I think, Group of Five. I'll be calling it the Group of Five anymore now that it's like a weird.
Oh, God. Great question.
I don't even know what the conferences are. Can we just eliminate the conferences?
You Frank Schwab, Big 12, top of the hour, too. Mountain West, so, yeah, we'll hit on that.
So not quite Group of Five. We'll have a Power Five in there as well, although I guess it's the least powerful of the five, perhaps, the Big 12 this year, which is kind of a hodgepodge. Frank Schwab, top of the hour as well, NFL. A numbers game continues after this, Vison.
A numbers game on VSiN, the sports betting network.
Hey, guess what? The College Football Betting Guide gets released tomorrow. Only for VSiN Pro subscribers. Features best bets from writers, on-air personalities, along with team previews of all 134 FBS teams. If you want the best and most comprehensive collection of picks, predictions, previews, now's the time to become a VSiN Pro subscriber. The College Football Betting Guide, out tomorrow. Our subscriptions include an all-access pass to VSiN Best Bets, Betting Tools, and Daily Articles. Sign up now, VSiN.com/subscribe. A numbers game back here on Wednesday morning. Jared Smith in for Gil this week. Kelly Bidlin here with us as well. Joining us now on the Progressive Guest Line, you are very familiar with his work. The host of VSiN Primetime, senior NBA analyst here at VSiN. He is Jonathan Bautobel. JVT, it's great to talk to you. Before we get to the college football guy, which you are obviously a big part of, we do have Olympic basketball, which is hot and heavy. And I'll be honest, I this is why I love you, pal. You keep it real. When Team USA the other day took care of business against Serbia, you're like, yeah, I guess we're all over those preliminary games, which looked a little shaky. Do you think we're going to see a much different matchup today against South Sudan than we saw the last time out?
Yeah, I mean, look, I think when you saw these friendlies, they are preseason contests. They are matchups that you are not game planning for, that you are not overly thrilled with, right? Because you're just trying to get through, you're trying to build continuity, you're working on different things. And the one thing that I kept harping on primetime throughout the entire process was, look, they played two of the three teams we consider to be the contenders, right, that were at least going to compete with them. It was Serbia and it was Canada in the tune-ups. And they handled both of them with relative ease. And then you see them play Serbia again, handle them with relative ease. I still think that even in this group play, you can work on some stuff, especially, you know, look, you're about, 29.5-point favorite today against South Sudan. But remember, point differential matters. And yes, while you expect this team to move on in group play, you don't want to leave the door open for anything. So I don't think they're going to take the foot off the gas in any way, shape, or form. We know they're going to do something different with the rotations. We know that Tatum's going to be out there. But I think this team against South Sudan the first time around wasn't taking it seriously, was in tune-up mode. And remember, too, guys, South Sudan in that first matchup hit 14 threes. They shot over 50% from the floor. Small guys were hitting step-back jumpers over Anthony Davis. I think it was JT Thor that had a step-back corner three late in the game. They gave him a lead. Like, there was a lot of different wild stuff in that friendly. I would expect a team that is going to push to cover this number here today in Team USA.
Yeah, really good stuff. I think I would lay it today with Team USA. Like, it feels like they're just going to put the pedal down and kind of show you that, hey, that last matchup was certainly a fluke. All right, let's get to the College Football Betting Guide. I'm sure you've been working really hard on this over the last, I don't know how long. Any correlation to your work with the NCAA football game and the college football betting guys? Some crossover matchups there? Maybe some scouting going on?
I don't know about some crossover and some scouting, but after 2 years in consecutive bowl seasons at Charlotte, I did get hired at Iowa State.
Congratulations. So,
we're on the way up.
Congratulations.
Kelly, are you into this game?
I haven't bought it yet.
I don't even have a system to play it.
No, I'm excited to play it. I haven't bought it yet. But now I keep hearing these I've heard from a couple people, and I feel like I'm an old man when I say this, but video games are getting tough, man. And I keep hearing from people about tough
kids
parts of this game.
At them too.
Yeah, all the kids are so good. I don't want to play tough video games. I like playing NBA 2K 10 years ago and just having LeBron go dunk it every single time. That was fun.
No, it's worth it. You do have to have a tiny little bit of football knowledge, right? You do have to read, all right, we got two high safeties. All right, maybe we're going to get to cover three here. You got to change your protections. You got to do a little bit. So it does help you out a little bit.
A little scouting here. All right, let's get into the Big 12. Very different year for the conference. Obviously, teams like Utah coming in, Arizona. How do you think it's going to shake it up? Do you think those teams coming in immediately get put at the top? Or do you think there's going to be some filtering here with this new conference?
No, I mean, I think the market's got this right. You know, with the Big 12, Utah deserves to be at the top. When you look at what the Utes are bringing back in here with Cam Rising, he doesn't count as a returning starter, but he should. We know he's played for an eternity. It's his seventh year as a quarterback in the NCAA. When you look at what he did his first full year, his last full year as a starter in 2022, he was amongst the best in college football. You look at some of those statistics for him. So we know that this team is going to be great. But for those who don't remember, 3,030 yards. He ran for 523, was responsible for 32 total touchdowns. That's a guy that you're getting back into the fold, that quarterback. I think you can argue that when you look at the offensive line, maybe there's some questions, right? They're retooling that. But you get so many guys back on defense for a team that finished 11th in the country in opponent EPA per play. And remember last year, this team had no business being in some of the games that it should have because its offense was so bad. It was that defense that kept them in it. And this thing remains mostly intact. There's some losses in the defensive backfield. But the group's worst ranking by far was they were 21st by EPA standards against the run last season. 21st. Wow. So they're going to be a very good team, I think, and they deserve to be at the top. But having said that, look at their schedule, and there is some noise here, right? You do have to take on Arizona. You get them at home. You have to go to Oklahoma State. You have to go and take on Iowa State at home. You get to host them, though, and you have to go to UCF. Those are going to be some competent teams that you could potentially slip up against. So I think generally the way I've handled this, Jared, is I'm looking elsewhere than the top of this, but I do think a team like Utah deserves to be favored.
If they're a Big 12, the Big 12 is going to get a team in the college football playoff. Utah's deserving of that spot. Do you think they can win a game in the college football playoff? Are they good enough to do that?
Yeah, I think so. I would never really doubt Whittingham and what he can do with the squad, how good they're going to be defensively. They're going to be a top 20 team defensively. And if you're going to be that good, and again, it depends on the matchup, right? I think you can win against anybody. I think the more interesting playoff angle for the Big 12 overall is this more than a one-bid league? I would say probably not. A heavy favorite that you're only getting one guy, one team out, and that would be your conference champion. Mm. But crazier things have happened. But I think that's the interesting dynamic with this is, if you get a conference champ, you get another team. And I would say it's very unlikely, just given the state of the conference and the fact that, the common thread amongst all of these teams is offense, good. Defense, eh. And that's going to, I think, lead to a lot of volatility when you look throughout this conference outside of Utah.
All right, let's go to the Mountain West. I know you're very invested in this conference, of course. What a year last year for UNLV. Do you think that's repeatable?
I do. I think what UNLV brings back here is going to be pretty fascinating and lead to, I think, some really good things. Now, the most important position, they have a brand new quarterback room outside of Cam Friel. And Cam Friel's been just a program stalwart. He's been third string quarterback there for years and really good kid, but he's not going to be competing for a starting job. So out Jade Maiava, he goes to Georgia and then USC. Doug Brumfield, who started for them last year, medically retired. So you bring in two FCS transfers for UNLV. You have Haj Malik Williams out of Campbell, and you have Matt Saluka coming in from Holy Cross. And while that, I think, turns some people off, these two guys are much better suited than Maiava was for this team last year in this what they call a go-go offense. You have to have some mobility out of your quarterback and some speed, and you can now have that with both with Williams and with Saluka. Saluka, I would say, is the favorite right now to win the job. So while you downgrade, if you will, a quarterback, I think it's actually a lateral move at worst, because these are two guys who schematically fit better with what you want to do. And then you have a great right receiver core, right? You have Ricky White coming back in. You have an All-American returner and special teams, or a special teamer in DeJesus. You've got the middle of your defense back in Jackson Woodard and others. They added a lot of size in the defensive backfield. And the most important is, you're always analyzing these, right, is the schedule. You get Boise State at home. You get Fresno State at home. The two teams that you're going to be competing with will have to come to you, and your road games are not as challenging. Utah State should be pretty good, but outside of that, Hawaii, winnable game, San Jose State rebuilding, Nevada, of course, you get them at home too. So I think this team is very much built to compete. They were one of the two teams that I bet to win the Mountain West. I bet them at 8-1 at Circa. That has since moved because Tedford, of course, over at Fresno State, has decided to retire. But I think this team is going to be very competitive in this conference.
We talked to Pete Futek yesterday. He's high on Air Force this year. They lost a ton, but they seem to be just a team or a program that seems to reload, despite the fact that you wouldn't think they have this deep recruiting class. But their win total sitting at 6.5. Any interest in getting involved with the Falcons this year?
I can't, man. Like, I get it. Like, Troy Calhoun has been absolutely awesome, and every single year. But, like, there's rebuilding, and then there's what Air Force is doing this year. They are bringing back nobody from last year. And I get it. Like, look, they have won 29 games over the last three seasons. They have been awesome. But your offensive line, which a couple of years ago was competing for the top honor in the nation, it is completely rebuilt, gone. Four starters are gone. Three of them all Mountain West members. Your quarterback, you're starting to retool that. Your junior fullback, your most experienced guy coming back, ran for just 493 yards in 2023. You're rebuilding your defense at every single position. Calhoun's been awesome. But I just don't know how, in a Mountain West that looks really competitive, Boise State, Fresno State, UNLV, I even think Wyoming, the other team I bet to win the conference, is going to be pretty good. I just don't know that I'm going to buy into a team rebuilding this much, even though the option really raises your floor, and Calhoun's such a great coach.
Great stuff. Thank you for answering that. I was going to ask you, what was the second team that you bet on to win the Mountain West? But as the consummate professional that you are, you already answered it for me. Jonathan Von Tobel, co-host of VSiN Primetime, and, of course, new head coach at Iowa State. Congratulations on the new gig, pal.
I appreciate it. Just took a road loss to Colorado. It was nonsense, but it's fine.
All right. Great stuff, as always. And good luck if you got the Olympics today. I don't know if you're laying it with Team USA. I think I might get involved there.
Appreciate it, guys.
Have a good one. Mountain West is always a fun conference to handicap. I think it's one of those conferences that the talent is good enough to where you need to pay attention to these kids, but there's still a little bit of that heart and hustle that is a little bit, I think sometimes is actually easier to quantify than some of the higher talented individuals. So great stuff always, JBT, Mountain West expert. All right, on the other side, we'll get back to the NFL. We've got some interesting topics to discuss. Maybe I'll give out a baseball better too at some point during the show as well. A numbers game continues on Visa.
A numbers game on VSiN, the sports betting network.
Thank you very much, JBT. Great stuff, of course. Catch him on VSiN Primetime later tonight. I'm going to be laying it with USA today. I haven't bet on the Olympics really much, but today feels like the day that they say, okay, it's time to show you how good we really are. And I know they showed that against Serbia, but they were embarrassed. Let's be honest. That was embarrassing against South Sudan. Like, I know that it was a preliminary game and it doesn't matter, but everyone was laughing at them, and they read social media. They are going to respond today, I think. What do you think?
Man, it's a big number. It's a big number. It's 28 points. That is 28 points you got to
win. I know. It is. How much did they beat Serbia by? And they have Nikola Jokic on their team.
Didn't get up to 20. Was it 30?
They beat him like 112-84. I think they beat him by 28.
It was like, it's right around. It was right around that number.
112-84, I think, was the final.
Some of that came in garbage time.
They're going to be up considerably in garbage time.
One thing to keep in mind about this tournament is that point differential does matter.
That's what I'm talking about. Yeah, that was the when JVT said that, my ears went whoop.
Which I love.
I don't know these rules. I don't pay attention to these rules. I've been capping this tournament.
For a lot of people that watch this basketball, I feel like every time there's FIBA competition of any kind.
Yeah, it's always weird rules. You got to be aware of the rules.
Well, and you always get the guys that are like, this rule and this rule should be a part of the NBA. What are we doing? And it's like the same guys every 2 years, and you're just like, they're not doing it. But the point differential one?
That matters.
I would love to see it, Jared. I would love to see it because so much it gets rid of so much of the unwritten rules of, you know, of sportsmanship and stuff.
Well, it matters in the NFL. That's one of the tiebreakers.
Mm-hmm. Yep.
So
I guess it does for the in-season tournament now.
Make it one of the tiebreakers. That's not a radical change.
I'm with you.
Not a radical change. Make point differential the number one tiebreaker in the NBA. Now, what are the odds after 82 games you have two teams that finish? It happens. It doesn't happen a lot, but it happens. It happens significantly more in the NFL, much fewer games. You don't have to be a math wizard to know that. Now,
so you got to go either more important or less important than that, because the problem is then you're gonna still have the unwritten rules guys, but then there's going to be like three or five coaches that, you know, that take it way too seriously and like want to run up the score every time, and then you know you're going to get all these other coaches complaining.
I think no matter what you do, this is what I've learned in life on 38 and a half years on this earth. It doesn't matter what you do, people will judge or complain.
Yeah, people love to complain.
I get judged for things. I do things one way, then I change my course. The other people judge me. Everyone gets criticized and judged, especially when you're in a public prominent situation, which obviously basketball, the NBA is. No matter what they change, people will gripe. People are griping on social media today, this morning. They don't like our button-down shirt. Shout out Mr. Sean Higgs on X. He says we're a little too chesty today. See, I have a dilemma here, Sean. If I go top button here, then I get like the weird like butler look.
This is
like
the most...
it looks like now I'm like serving your caviar.
Same here.
I don't like
this look for either one of us.
No,
this is like the most common topic on the show.
Casual. Like if I had chest hair popping out, I would say okay, maybe I should calm myself down. But that's not. It's summertime. I trim it down here in the summertime.
I'm headed on vacation in an hour and a half. All right, Sean. So
honestly, you're lucky Kelly's even wearing a shirt. You're lucky he's got sleeves on today. But we appreciate you chiming in on X. Please feel free. We don't take your comments personally. I've heard it all. I've literally heard every insult and critique in the book at this point in my career. So feel free to chime in. If it's constructive, I'll read it on air. If not, I'll probably just ignore it. All right, let's get to what I think is becoming. This is actually, and I give Tim Murray a lot of credit for this. I didn't even bet this market until, you know, a few months ago, and he was all hot and heavy. But all right, I'll throw a few shekels down. I think they want to bet. I think the Primetime crew and Gil both won the same month. Was this back in June now, or was it May? Have you figured out which month it was that you guys won?
Yes, Astros June. Right?
Astros June. Yeah. So we're now in August, or at least we will be tomorrow, and the time has come now to place an August most wins bet.
Bum, bum, bum.
We talked about these teams yesterday. Do you want to give us the bet that you have first? How do you want to play this?
Real quick, let's recap July, because there is...
Oh, good point.
Yeah,
good
for
point.
People that do have July bets, today matters. You've got the Mets with 17 wins in the month. Diamondbacks with 16. So this is still up for grabs today if you do have a July month long bet. And you've got, both teams in action. Mets, I forget who they have, but someone pretty
Mets
good.
Mets play the Twins. Pablo Lopez, Luis Severino. Good pitching matchup, actually. I would argue the two aces of the staff.
And then Diamondbacks have the Nationals. So if you're holding the Mets ticket, you're probably sweating a little bit at least.
I think
today.
The D-backs are winning today. Let's look at the numbers. Let's let the odds decide here. Actually, give me a second. I need my odds screen to refresh.
Like I've got everything pulled up on MLB. All right, you have the Mets minus 102, Twins minus 118. So the slight dog to the Twins, even at home. And then the Diamondbacks are minus 180 favorites with Zach Gallen on the mound.
The Diamondbacks, I think, are the hottest team in the National League right now. The Mets are obviously having a really good month, but I think the D-backs are. I think the D-backs win today. Now, here's the better question, and I'm not I don't gamble professionally, so I never have big money at stake for bets like these. But if you did have big money at stake for a bet like this, how would you even hedge it? Would you just fade the team you have, or would you bet on the team that you don't have? It's actually a really difficult question. I would need a math person to tell me.
It is, and it's also there's also the different, like Gil and I have talked about this often, but different house rules depending on where you bet this too, with what happens with tiebreakers and everything.
Matters.
Exactly.
I think Circa does a run differential, right?
Correct. Yeah. They do a run differential.
So do you know the run differentials? Because that matters too.
Not off the top of my head, Jared.
But, I mean, I don't know if you had that in this monthly standings. What website do you use that does monthly standings?
StatMuse is usually just
StatMuse is good. I was looking at this the other day. I probably have like $500 a month I spend on data and subscription services to places like StatMuse and props.cash and all these other random. I just signed up for a new odd screen the other day that has Nerfies. I've never seen a Nerfy odd screen before until this place.
Oh, that's cool.
Yeah, and it's very helpful.
Who's
actually
doing that?
Odds Jam.
Okay.
Very helpful.
Odds Jam's a good spot.
And it's only $80 a month.
Yeah. That's
now
good.
I pay a lot for Don Best now.
Mm-hmm.
I'm thinking about not paying that as much anymore because I feel like I'm getting a similar product on Odds Jam. Not as good. Don Best is still the best.
It's tough with us in Vegas. The problem is Don Best is always like at least for now, it's still probably
Westgate.
The best for Vegas.
I agree.
Outside of Vegas, I agree. Not the best at all.
But also Don Best doesn't have Nerfies, and I bet, I would say if you tallied up every bet that I make on the 365-day calendar year, I would say maybe half of them are on Nerfies. Because there's just such a heavy volume throughout the course of the regular season. All right, I digress. So there's your recap for July. If you're holding a D-backs ticket, you're feeling okay. If you're holding a Mets ticket, you're probably praying that Zach Gallen gets the flu before this game starts, but August is unique. I did a schedule tally for August last night. Let me pull it up right now. I think if you're looking at August, I think that the most important thing is, do you believe that a team, because the Mets are favored basically in this market besides the Yankees, but do you think I don't think the Mets are going to be favored in all their games because they're the Mets, and they don't have as high of a power rating as the Yankees and the Padres do, obviously the Dodgers and the Braves. Like, all those teams at the top of the list have a higher power rating than the Mets do, but the Mets' schedule is where you're seeing the value here. They get three right out of the gate at Anaheim, then a random one at St. Louis, then Colorado, Seattle, Oakland, Miami. Tough series against Baltimore. Then they play San Diego basically the last week of the month. I think that's intriguing to me.
Mm-hmm.
Because the other team I like in this market is San Diego. Because I think San Diego's schedule is the easiest. Look at how easy San Diego's schedule is. This is why I think the Padres probably deserve a little bit of your money, too. Colorado, Pittsburgh, Miami, Pittsburgh, Colorado. I mean, that's just Colorado, Pittsburgh, Miami, Pittsburgh, Colorado. You are playing the three worst teams in the National League for 15 games. That is an incredible advantage for San Diego. And then the back half of the month, Minnesota, who's a playoff team, the Mets, who we mentioned is an intriguing matchup. And then things get a little tougher at the end of the month at St. Louis, at Tampa Bay. Tampa Bay's obviously sellers, but it's still on the road. It's interleague, and obviously four against St. Louis is the toughest series they will have. And I think that St. Louis series, you're going to be facing some pretty good pitchers. Sonny Gray, now Eric Fetty, and a couple of others where you might be a dog in some of those games. But I think San Diego is going to be a favorite in like every game this month, with the exception of maybe those few at St. Louis. Whereas the Mets, I don't know if they'll be favored in every game at Seattle. They definitely won't be favored against Baltimore. And they probably won't be favored at San Diego or at Arizona.
Mm-hmm.
So there's going to be a lot of underdog scenarios for the Mets, significantly more than the Padres. But I would say right now the Padres are a little more Jekyll and Hyde.
Also feels like a good chance. I mean, you know, how much of that four-game series could decide this market? You know, I mean, those with two of the top favorites. We'll tell everybody. I don't think you've made a bet yet.
No, we'll come back on the other side. We'll give out some selections.
Okay. All right.
Yep.
Great.
Yeah, well, I think based off of what I just said, you know where I'm leaning. I think I'm going to bet two, but I'm going to bet more on one than the other. And
gotcha.
We'll have more on that on the other side. A numbers game on VSiN continues.
Numbers told the story, they always do.
It's one of those idiots who believe in analytics.
This is a numbers game with Gil Alexander on VSiN.
All right, we are back. Top of the hour. Last hour, best hour. Numbers game on VSiN. Jared in for Gil. Kelly with us as well. Joining us now on the Progressive Guest Line. Very excited to talk to this gentleman, as I always am. Frank Schwab covers the NFL and sports betting for Yahoo Sports. Cover him or follow him on X at Yahoo Schwab. Frank, great to talk to you today. Let's start with who I think is going to be one of the very intriguing teams in the NFL this year, and that's the Detroit Lions. I've got them top five across the board in almost every single positional unit. I mean, they are stacked, especially up front at offensive line. You can make the case the quarterback maybe a little bit outside of that, but I think Jared Goff in this system with Ben Johnson, they are ready to roll. Getting Ben Johnson back, I mean, he's the best OC in the league right now. Hopes high. Are they sky high for the Lions? Should we have Super Bowl expectations here?
Sky high for me, I'll tell you that. I published my Lions preview yesterday, and at the end I said they were my pick to win Super Bowl 59. As crazy as that sounds, this is literally the first time in an offseason where we could say with a straight face that the Detroit Lions are Super Bowl contenders, wow. Right? Like, it's never really happened before. They were okay in the Barry Sanders era and all that, but this is probably the best Lions team since 1957. And all the reasons you said, they're stacked everywhere. Best offensive line in football. Amon-Ra St. Brown is probably a top five receiver at this point, 10 at worst. Two good running backs. I mean, Sam Laporta was a record-setting tight end. And then you look, and I really, really like their offseason. They said, look, our cornerbacks aren't good enough. We gave up 69 plays of 20 yards or more in the pass game. That was by far the most in the league. The Chiefs, for example, tied for the league lead in 39 20-yard pass plays given up. So the Lions needed to shore up cornerback, and they went out and got four of them. So I really like what the Lions did this offseason. And to take your point a step further, my favorite bet of the offseason might be Jared Goff to win MVP.
Yep.
Look, if I love the Lions, we know the formula. As bettors, we understand we're not betting on who I think should win MVP. It's who's going to win MVP. Voters have simply told us, take the top seed in each conference, it's going to be one of those quarterbacks. That's what's happened each of the last 8 years. It's happened 12 of the last 15 years. And I think the Lions are going to be the number one seed in the NFC. And that gives Jared Goff a much better chance to win MVP than the 25-1 odds that they have him at now, 35-1, where I got him at earlier in the offseason. I love this Lions team. I'm all in on them.
Yeah, that's a numbers bet. Like, the Lions right now are the third favorite in the NFC. You can make a case that they're kind of on par with the Eagles. The Niners still the prohibitive favorite, even though I'm a little more down on San Francisco than maybe most because of their offensive line. But the fact that Jared Goff was like the 10th, 11th, 12th quarterback on the MVP list, yet the Lions have that better of a chance to be the number one seed. And like you said, I had attracted seven consecutive years a number one seed. That quarterback has won the MVP. You might be right. I might have been missing one year along the line there. But it the voters have spoken. Like, if you finish as the number one seed, that quarterback is going to win MVP. I mean, that's just kind of the way the NFL has been over the last decade or so. Speaking of players that maybe have a chance to win MVP, although I think it's an outside shot because I don't know how high I am on Deshaun Watson this year, but man, the Cleveland Browns, the roster is so set. It's just the questions at quarterback. I love the coach. He was the coach of the year last year with one of the worst quarterback situations you could possibly imagine. You think the Browns with Watson or without Watson are going to be a Super Bowl contender this year?
Absolutely. I'm going to be picking the Lions over the Browns in the Super Bowl, which must mean the apocalypse is going to happen in mid-February, right? Because I love this Browns team. I don't get why the betting market is so low on them. Look, Deshaun Watson's not going to win MVP, period. Like, he could throw for 9,000 yards, and he's not going to get voted MVP. I can tell you that right now. Just will not happen, but it doesn't matter for what I'm taking, which is a team that won 11 games last year with absolutely horrible quarterback play at some points. I mean, they were just miserable at quarterback. And the market has them, I believe they're over-under still 8.5. I took it early, so I haven't seen any movements in that. You're telling me that Deshaun Watson guiding that team, the Browns are going to be 3 wins worse this year? I don't see that at all. People are so, like, I get Deshaun Watson's a villain. He's a guy nobody wants to root for. But I think that gets into people's heads a little bit too much. I'm just trying to win a bet here, right? Like, and I look at Deshaun Watson, he's 28 years old. A few years ago, he was a top 7 quarterback in the NFL, 6-7, wherever you want to slot him, he was there. I think he can get back to close to that level. I don't think he's going to get back to that level again. But can he be 10th best quarterback in the NFL, 12th best quarterback in the NFL? I think if his shoulder's healthy, yes. The answer is yes. Again, not a likable guy. That guy, I'm going to go buy his jersey or anything. But I think he could be better than Joe Flacco last year. We had this weird deal with Joe Flacco where we acted like he just had the fountain of youth. Well, maybe it was because he was playing with a ridiculously loaded team around him. Great offensive line, really good receivers, really good tight end, best defense in the league maybe last year. So very, very high on the Browns this year. I love their odds to win the division, love their over, love them to represent the AFC in the Super Bowl. Anything you can give me positive on the Browns, I'm taking it because I really, really like this team.
I think the best argument for betting the Browns this year is the Deshaun Watson angst, because that will translate to better numbers throughout the course of the season betting on him. Because you're right, there's a negative connotation with him right now, and it's not always going to work out that way, Frank, but for the most part, when you're the villain, when you're the enemy, the public is going to be against you, and some weeks that might transpire, or it might manifest itself with maybe getting some, you know, maybe a half a point on average better on the Browns against the spread week to week, just based off of the bias against Cleveland. So it's a very interesting point. Their roster, I mean, goodness gracious, the defense is absolutely fantastic. The schedule, too, especially in the beginning part of the season, I mean, that game against Dallas is tough, but then Jacksonville, Giants, Raiders, Commanders, and then they're going to be a dog at Philly, and then they really get into the meat of the North there with the Bengals and the Ravens back-to-back weeks. Things get tough down the stretch, too. You get at Cincinnati versus Kansas City there in week 15. That's going to be a really interesting game. And, of course, you finish the season at Baltimore, which is always, who knows, that could be for the division title on the line between the Browns and the Ravens there in week 18. All right, let's move on to another team that I, very near and dear to my heart, the New York Jets. I'm praying, Frank, that there can be some kind of a comeuppance, because Aaron Rodgers, and here's my crazy theory. Tell me if you think I'm off base. I think Aaron Rodgers is a little bit miffed at Jordan Love's contract, and he's gonna stick it to the Packers and be like, hey, listen, you want to pay this guy? I'm going to show you this. And I'm not saying he needs any more extra motivation, but anything to get Aaron Rodgers more fired up for a season I think is good for the Jets. Where are you on the Jets this year and the headspace of their quarterback?
Yeah, another team I really like, and it's the same exact story, and it's been the same exact story for the Jets the last couple seasons, where just give them average quarterback play and what can they do? They were, as you know, absolutely positively miserable quarterback last year. Dead last of the league of passer rating, and that passy eye test, if they were unwatchable, absolutely unwatchable week after week. Can Aaron Rodgers, again, using the kind of, you know, nebulous ranking system, can Aaron Rodgers be the 15th best quarterback in the NFL? Well, if he is, that is such a massive upgrade for the Jets that I don't see how they don't walk to double-digit wins. I mean, Aaron Rodgers, look, he's coming off a serious injury. He's going to be 41 years old in December. He wasn't great his last season in Green Bay. He was good. He wasn't great. So do we see Aaron Rodgers hit a wall? Maybe, but I do like the Jets too. And man, I'm just sitting here talking about the Lions, Browns, and Jets. What am I doing?
Like, yeah, I don't know.
Three of the most miserable franchises there are, but how could you not like the Jets? I really thought it was illuminating that Pro Football Focus ranked all the units in the NFL, right? Running backs and tight ends and offensive line and all that. The number one defensive line for Pro Football Focus was the New York Jets. The number one linebacker core for Pro Football Focus was the New York Jets. The number one secondary in the NFL for Pro Football Focus was the New York Jets. I don't agree with all that, but they're not worse than top five in any of those. This defense is going to be awesome. Garrett Wilson's awesome. I got some Breece Hall Offensive Player of the Year tickets already. I think this team's going to be really, really good. I do think they win the AFC East. I still like the Bills, too. I think the pendulum swung too far on the Bills. But this Jets team, there's really no reason, especially when you look at their early season schedule, they can't get off to a good start, get some confidence in what they're doing, and just say, wow, you know, we were going 7-10 with zero quarterback play. We have a four-time MVP playing quarterback now. We're actually pretty good, and we can make a run at this thing.
Hey, Frank, I think I'm looking at the AFC East, you know, basically the same way as you. Where does that leave you with the Dolphins? Because to me, they are one of the teams I think I've got some concerns and questions about in the AFC that's higher up there when it comes to win totals, division odds, et cetera.
Yeah, didn't love their offseason. I mean, three free agent switch teams that got $100 million contracts, and two of them left the Dolphins. Now, look, Robert Hunt was overpaid. Christian Wilkins was overpaid. But those are still big losses for the Dolphins. And they were already a team I was looking to fade, because something we talked about all last season, we're going to bring it up again, quality wins. They just didn't beat anybody. Yeah, they beat the Cowboys on the last second field goal at home. That was their only good win all year. That leads me to believe that they're just beating up the Broncos of the world, right? Yeah, you could blast the Patriots, and there's some skill in that. I get that. I like the Dolphins. I'm not sitting here telling you the Dolphins are going to be 6-11 or anything, but I have a hard time getting behind them. They're a team I'm going to be fading early in the season if they're playing a good team. If they're playing a bad team, you could probably take them. But I'm fading the Dolphins. Don't love their offseason. Don't love the fact that they couldn't beat good teams last year. Don't love the fade at the end of the year, even though there are a lot of injuries involved there. Look, if I'm high on the Jets and I think everybody's too low on the Bills, I got to fade the Dolphins, right?
Yep. Yeah, I think the Bills are the one team that I'm undecided on. I think the Dolphins, I feel
they're
like
really
I'm just a little concerned with the defense.
I can't go against the Bills as long as Josh Allen's there. Like that's the way I feel. I think he's that
special. They were a good team. And don't overrate that Stephon Diggs trade, because Diggs was a ghost for them the last two-thirds of last season.
It's fair.
I think that they're going to figure it out, and Josh Allen's Superman. So they're coming from a place where they were really, really good. So even if they take a step back, they're still going
to
be good.
It's fair to say that the Stephon Diggs trade could be in the Tyreek Hill, where we were overvaluing it, and then the Chiefs came and they won the Super Bowl the next year. Frank Schwab, appreciate the time, pal. Always good catching up.
Thank you.
We'll come back. More AFC East. We'll dive more into the Bills. Maybe I'm not looking at the Bills properly. I'll take another look next on A Numbers Game.